Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the show that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whoever else is out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Eric Kessel, at least for today. We have reached a special milestone today, as it will be my last episode of Social Design Insights. It's been an amazing 2.5 years and 125 episodes, and I am moving on. I'm told that this isn't the last episode of Social Design Insights, so you can stay tuned and continue subscribing. The Curry Stone Foundation will be doing podcasts periodically and on an ad hoc basis, so y'all should keep an eye out. Keep your eyes peeled on the Curry Stone Foundation website for dispatches from the future. I'm staying on with the Curry Stone Foundation and have agreed to work on another separate special project, which I can't disclose at the moment. However, I and the Foundation will be providing appropriate teasers in the near future, and I hope to be in full disclosure in time for the holidays. So this show began as a special project, and we weren't really sure whether it would work out or not. We originally committed to a year, then everybody seemed to be enjoying it so much, and the audience was getting so much out of it, and I was having fun with it. So we just kept it going. However, all good things must come to an end, and I will be delving into another project after a good long weekend of fishing. I thought it would be opportune to talk a little bit about how all of this got started, because it's actually an amazing story in and of itself, and it's never been told on the air. In 2015, I had been living in Asia, and I was bumming around Nepal and Laos working on a book project. And I came back to the States for a few things and was contacted by the Curry Stone Foundation. And they were working on a couple of initiatives and interested in how they were going to pursue their second decade as a foundation. They asked me to come on board and help with a couple of these projects. So we started this. We started this in conjunction with the Social Design Circle, which was our 100 awardees in 2017 that we felt had really shaped the course of social design over the last decade. So we started the podcast partnership with that. And literally the origins of it were myself and Emiliano Gandolfi, my former co-host, with a whiteboard and some post-it notes, sitting down and trying to figure out how we were going to organize the social design space. And we began with a question. I mean, both of us had been doing this for a while from very, very different perspectives, him as a curator and myself as more of a field guy. And we said, you know, what are the questions that are unresolved for us? What are we still concerned about after, you know, a decade or two decades of social design and all the amazing practices and projects that have come forward? So we wrote out these 12 questions and we said, okay, you know, in our dream world, who are the people that could really answer them for us? And that's how the first 12 months of Social Design Insights was really curated. And we continued to follow a similar sort of process, tackling the biggest questions we could find about the world and about social design. And then asking ourselves, okay, who on earth is uniquely suited to answer this particular question? And that's the animus that all kind of has driven the show all along. So in the course of this, you know, after 125 episodes, including this one, which is just me interviewing myself, I guess, I started to think about, you know, what's the real takeaway here? And I think if I had to sum it up, I'd lay out 5 main things that I've learned in talking to all of these designers over the last couple of years. So this is not an excuse to not listen to all of the old episodes, which you should definitely do. But if I had to write down the 5 things that I learned walking with giants, these would be they. Lesson 1, look for the helpers. Admittedly, this is cribbed from Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers once told a story about when he was in despair, his mother would advise him to look for the helpers in any situation. In any situation, the helpers are there. They're working every day, and it's easy to get hung up on those who aren't helping and those who are hurting. If all you do is read design magazines and peruse monographs and hang out on Twitter, you might not ever realize that there's a whole field of designers out there working on this stuff. Things like climate change, structural inequality, urban decay, mass migration. I mean, they're designers working as we speak, big brains tackling this project. And that always inspires me. I mean, I was inspired by all of my guests. But honestly, when I'm feeling down, I still go back and listen to old episodes to hear about the state of the world, to hear about these remarkable helpers that are out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm sure you can pick your favorites, but my standbys would probably be Francis Corre in episodes 56 and 57. Francis led us on a wonderful, inspiring journey about his practice, which began in a rural village in Burkina Faso and has led to international stardom and acclaim. And he still lives and works in both worlds and is helping, you know, the world of high-flying architecture understand the needs of people who don't live there, as he continues to help his village and rural Africa with his remarkable design talent. I'd look also at Joshua Silver of the Center for Vision and Developing World. We interviewed him in December of 2017. That was episode 53. Dr. Silver tells his amazing story about, you know, he sat down, he was a physicist and thought that maybe, you know, he could invent a kind of an alternative kind of eyeglass if he, you know, tweaked it like this and did that, and ended up doing so, ended up tackling this remarkable problem of vision in the developing world. We take for granted the notion that we can, you know, get eyeglasses and contacts, and that's just simply not a reality for the bottom billion. They have to live their lives not being able to see the chalkboard clearly or not being able to drive. And Dr. Silver is tackling that project every day. I would, of course, have to mention Yasmin Lari, who is a personal hero of mine. We interviewed her in episode 16. Yasmin had a remarkable career before she turned her attention to social design. She was the first licensed female architect in Pakistan and had a successful career in corporate architecture. And then it was later in life that she turned towards disaster relief and cultural preservation and all of these different things that she does now. I had a chance to finally meet Yasmin last year at a conference in Melbourne, and she was personally running a bamboo building workshop for students. And, you know, she was there bright and early teaching these students how to build with bamboo. I was late. I slept in. I was a little jet lagged. Yasmin, if you're listening, I'm still sorry about that. And I would have wanted to come for the whole thing. And finally, I would mention Suzanne Lacey, who's an extraordinary artist working out of Los Angeles. Suzanne has been active since the 1970s, and her art has focused on public installations that examined issues like rape, the invisibility of rape as a crime, and broader issues of feminism, including how we regard femininity and women in the public sphere, especially how we tend to marginalize women as they age. We had a fascinating conversation with Suzanne in episode 62, and I just had a chance to revisit her work at a recent exhibit at SF MoMA, and was just, again, blown away by the visceral, uncompromising nature of her art and the fact that she has so fearlessly shone a light on so many issues for so long. She's been out there in the world helping for 40 years, and man, she just has no quit. Lesson two, stop making excuses. I, in my various roles, talk to a lot of young designers who say, hey, you know, I want to help save the world, but I got this and I got that and I got these student loans and et cetera. All of the 124, more guests than that, at any rate, all the guests that we've talked to have had things, right? They have student loans, they have sick relatives, they have insecurities and all the rest. And some of our guests I've actually grown quite close to and can tell you that they're human beings. They deal with all of that. And I think that we've become fragile in contemporary life. And then often it's the minor things that really derail us from doing what we should and could be doing. Or fear. You know, fear is a big one. You can't fail at something if you never tried it in the first place. So I think that slowly grinds us towards a life of predictable comforts. Working somewhere, you know, for some reason, for someone else's dream, and you got your rent paid and your loans paid, but there's something missing, which is, I think, one of the reasons you listen to this show. The guests of this show constantly remind me that whatever problems I have in my bucket in my life are actually pretty damn small. Or, you know, maybe they're not. But either way, that's not a good reason to not be designing. I mean, just get out there and do it and burn your ships and get it done. When I start thinking that maybe I'm on the wrong path because this hardship is piled on top of that inconvenience, a few specific episodes come to mind. The first has got to be Cluster Cairo. We interviewed Omar Nagati and Beth Stryker in episodes 54 and 55, and they told us the story of creating this organization, Cluster Cairo, out of the Arab Spring. And, you know, really talking and discussing about how public space was going to be used and who has the right to the city. And that's an academic conversation in most of the Western world. In Cairo, at that time, it was a life and death question. You know, it was who has the right to the streets? Well, you know, the police and the army had a pretty strong opinion on the matter. So they were able to create this organization and create this dialogue even amidst that particular hardship. I think of El Borde. We interviewed David Barragán in episode 13, and he tells the story of going out to visit, I think it was his cousin or maybe the cousin of one of the members of El Borde. And they were in this remote village, and he would say, hey, you know, what do you need? And they said, well, we need a school. And of course, you know, they're all young designers, so nobody has any money. But through sheer creativity, I think, and the force of will, they were able to build this school. And they had a total budget of $300. And I think of that one in particular when, you know, I think, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that because, you know, I don't have enough money. If El Borde can build a school for $300, what's my excuse and what's yours? And finally, I would highlight Christian Benimana of Mass Design in Rwanda, whom we interviewed in episode 75. Christian is a remarkable architect and has a remarkable story. He grew up in Rwanda wanting to become an architect. And at the time, there were no architecture schools in Rwanda. So he applied abroad to see if he could get a scholarship and ended up getting into architecture school in Shanghai. So he then learned Mandarin in a year so that he could go to architecture school abroad. That baffles me. I went to architecture school. It was hard as hell, and I can't imagine getting through it in a language that I had only learned like 5 minutes prior. But Christian did it. And then he returned home to Kigali to practice and ended up founding an architecture school of his own of sorts. The African Design Center is a new kind of educational paradigm, founded because Christian believes that the future of Africa should be designed and built by Africans. So the next time you find yourself making excuses to yourself, consider revisiting some of these episodes and some of these remarkable designers. If this show has taught me anything, it's that incredible things are always possible. We're going to take a quick break, and I will be back with the next three takeaways from Social Design Insights. Pay close attention to the music, because there's a quiz at the end of the show. While you're listening, you can find access to all of the aforementioned episodes and hundreds of other episodes on our website at curriestonefoundation.org. You can also find all the latest news on social impact design by following us on social media. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Social Design Insights and on Twitter at Social Design IN. Those accounts will remain active as the show transitions, so they'll continue to bring you the latest cool stuff in social impact design, so remember to follow. We'll be right back with more Social Design Insights after the break. So that was a refreshing pause, I think you'll agree. Does anyone know the name of that ditty? I will tell you at the end of the show. But in the meantime, I promise you three more takeaways, lessons that I've learned in the last 2.5 years talking to all of these amazing impact designers. So let's get to it with lesson three. Lesson three, if you see something the world needs, go out and make it. If it's been done before, someone will eventually point that out and you can stop. So many of our guests share the exact same story. Man, you know, I had this idea and I was like, huh, I wonder why this doesn't exist yet. So I guess I'll start working on it. And they kept expecting someone to stand up and say, hey, that's my idea. I've already done that. And it never happened. So they just ended up creating an organization or creating a product or creating whatever it was. And then that became like the thing, the reason that they were on the show. One of my favorite examples of this is We Care Solar, founded by Dr. Hal Aronson and his wife, Dr. Laura Satchel. We interviewed Hal on the show in episode 101, and he told us the story about, you know, this was a collaboration between him and his wife, and she was working in Africa, and there was maternity wards that didn't have steady state electricity, which was problematic when you're in the middle of an operation or for an incubator or these sorts of things. So he started tinkering around and managed to come up with this solar suitcase, and it literally took form because they had to put it in suitcases and take it on commercial airlines in order to deploy it into the field. And it became this device that can now be relied upon to provide steady state electricity. I'd also mention Bruce King of the Ecological Building Network in episode 121. He has achieved a number of firsts and, you know, was candid about the fact that, you know, a lot of his work started out thinking, hey, you know, someone should have done this or someone has done this. Like, why doesn't this exist? And ended up being a pioneer in building codes for natural building forms in California because they didn't exist. So he had to go out and create them. I'd say the same thing about Ashok Jajil, the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratories. We interviewed Ashok in episode 35, and his lab has produced a number of inventions that target problems in the developing world, whether it's unclean water or jaundice or whatever it is. And amazingly, Ashok's lab continues to kind of turn out ideas about this problem because no one else has, because, you know, the problems exist and they're stubborn. And you would assume that, you know, the UN's got this figured out or the World Bank's got this figured out. But if they don't, go out and do your own thing. And finally, I would mention Rick Lowe, whom we interviewed in episode 23. Rick is the founder of Project Row House. And again, on the show, it tells the story about how, you know, he was an artist. He was doing his thing. And he was challenged by a group of students who said, hey, you know, why can't this art do more for the community? And he was revolutionary in terms of the way that he turned art into a community building program that now has, you know, programs and classes and housing all arising out of an artist's conviction. And it's just a startling and deeply inspirational story. Lesson four, I would say be optimistic. And that may be a tough one to swallow, especially nowadays. But I would say that no matter what the world tells you, the world is getting better. And there's plenty to be optimistic about. I think that social media and the news has had a demonstrable effect on our psychic wellness. And I think we perceive the world as being worse than it is. We compare everybody's best day against our average day, and then we get depressed. Well, I'm done with that personally. The world's getting better. And if you don't believe me, go back and listen to our interview with Stephanie Wakefield of Florida International University. She was on in episode 87, and she has a remarkable view of the world. She's been doing a lot of research and publishing on the issue of backloop resilience, the idea that a lot of the calamities that we perceive as going on are necessary parts of a cycle that, in fact, unleash periods of growth and creativity the way that a forest fire unleashes growth in a forest. So, not to minimize any of the horrible things that the world is going through now, but to perhaps suggest that they enable great work that's yet to come. Great work that you may indeed be responsible for. I would also definitely listen to our interview with Lena Rumstadt. That was episodes 33 and 34. Lena, along with her Korean collaborators, created an organization called Gyo-Gyo that serves the Korean people. And the Korean people have been persecuted for decades, forced out of Myanmar, but not accepted into Thailand. They live in kind of an in-between space that makes architecture difficult to even contemplate. And nonetheless, it occurs. And it's grounded in Lena's and her colleagues' obvious optimism about life. And despite decades of persecution, they can go forward and make a school or make a home. They can make architecture because they're fueled by that optimism. And in making that architecture, the world actually does become a better place. Lesson five, start right now, today. If you're a longtime listener of this show, you know that I have an affinity for practices that were started by students, and there are so, so many, including our last guest, Dr. Ken Yang, who started his work as a doctoral student in the early 70s and continues to this day. A lot of people go through design school and they think, ah, damn, you know, I've got to do my portfolio, I got to get a job, etc. I can't wait to get out there and get an apartment and pay bills and play grown up. And that's okay. I did the same thing when I came out of school. But the thing is that you get to a point where you realize you spent a lot of time living out someone else's ideas about what it means to be successful, what it means to be a professional, an architect, a designer, whatever. And most tragically, you end up living out someone else's idea about what it means to be happy. I think that's something that a lot of our guests had in common was a willingness to just start. They weren't waiting for the time when everything was stable, everything was settled. They just started. They just went for it, and you should too. If you don't know what I'm talking about, check out our interview with Konki Design Initiative. We interviewed Chelina Odbert and Jennifer Toy in episode 26, and they told us the story about how they and four other of their classmates started KDI when they were still students at the GSD. They saw a problem and they went for it, and that work continues to this day. I think the story of Stalker, the Italian collaborative, is also a wonderful example. We spoke with Lorenzo Romito in episode 49. Stalker was founded in 1990 by a group of architecture students during an occupation of Rome University. In that interview, Lorenzo discussed the territory of architecture and how it can be expanded both physically and metaphorically. And he started as a student, and it continued on. More recently, I would cite Black and Design. We interviewed Amanda Miller and Courtney Sharp in episodes 77 and 78. They offered us a wonderful perspective, I think, because they're still at the beginning. I think at the time, Courtney had just graduated and Amanda was still in school. But, you know, they're both students looking towards the future. They weren't waiting for the future to happen. They were creating something in real time, even while they were still students. So that's it. Five things I learned talking to several hundred of the world's best social designers over the last couple of years. I hope that it's been as rewarding and enriching for you as it has been for me, and hope that whatever you're working on, it lights the world on fire. I mean, you know, in a good way. I think finally, it's wholly appropriate and necessary to give out a whole round of acknowledgments, not just from the show, but from myself personally. I think that top lists have to be Cliff and Delight, Cliff Curry and Delight Stone, the founders of the Curry Stone Foundation, for their vision and for enabling this project. I think we were all skeptical at the beginning, and we said, well, you know, how are we going to do like a podcast that is audio about something like design, which is inherently visual? And, you know, they were able to see through it, to see ahead, and have been wonderfully supportive all along the way, even as we've tackled some tough subjects and made some tough decisions. And none of this would have been possible without their support. I'd like to give a formal thank you to Emiliano Gandolfi. I mentioned him earlier. Emiliano is more than a co-host. You know, he was the original instigator of all this. And I think it was the pairing of our particular experiences that, you know, made the show what it is and led to that early success in figuring out what the show was going to be about and what the tenor and the tone of it was going to be. Emiliano is one of the people that I can point to over the course of my career and say, you know, I became a better architect and a better person by virtue of working with Emiliano. He taught me so much about this space. And, you know, I came into it thinking that I was an expert in it, of course. And I think working with Emiliano really challenged me and expanded my thinking about this field of social design. I would say the same thing about Karen Kuby, my other co-host. You know, the nice thing about having a co-host is that it's an intrinsic negotiation. You have to test out your ideas and let them evolve. And I never got another co-host because no one really measured up to Karen. but working with her, again, just it taught me so much about, you know, my own perspective and about the show and about this process of storytelling. So thank you, Karen. I'd like to thank Baruch Zeichner. What can I say about Baruch? Baruch has had his touch on every single episode. He's done the editing on every episode going back to our very first debut episode. So to the extent that I sound intelligible on any given episode, it's because Baruch really edits the hell out of these things and makes them sound professional. So I owe him a deep debt of gratitude. Baruch has been with us from the beginning. He also has produces and hosts his own podcast called Paradigms, which you should check out. And fun fact, he also picks the music for every episode. I think he's been steadily trying to get me to appreciate music older than I am, which has had mixed results, some wins, some losses. I promised you a reveal. That song at the break was, in fact, Urubamba by Los Incas from their record El Último. I asked, I didn't actually ask. He just went ahead and did it. He picked out some break music for this final episode, and I think it's a perfect nod to my mixed Peruvian and redneck heritage. And I take it as a profound compliment. Thank you, Baruch. I'd like to thank Diana Bianchini and her team at Demoda Public Relations. Demoda has done the heavy lifting on PR for all of the Curry Stone Foundation's initiatives going back many years. And the launch and promotion of the show has remained in their capable hands. So to the extent that you find Social Design Insights in your social media feed or in your inbox, we have Diana and her team to thank for that. I'd like to thank the rest of the Curry Stone team. Taryn Turner, the former director of the Curry Stone Foundation, was instrumental in a lot of the early work that led to shaping up the design circle as well as Social Design Insights. Cindy Luzier, who handles finances for the foundation and makes sure that everything runs right. Donna Reed, who makes all the films for the Curry Stone Foundation and has supported us with video work along the way. Leah Friedenrich, who stood in as managing director while Delight took her sabbatical, as well as the Curry Stone Foundation board for their unwavering support of this endeavor over the last couple of years. I'd also like to thank everyone whose brain I've ever picked. This show has been incredibly research intensive. It just takes time, and a lot of phone time. Being on the phone constantly asking people what they're working on, what other people are working on, who they admire, what's going on. All of that was unpaid and volunteer. And there's probably literally hundreds of people out there that over the last couple of years I've called them up and asked them a lot of questions about their work. And that's the grunt work that made this show what it is. I'd like to thank the unnamed members of the teams of our guests. It's a show, so frequently we interview the principal or the founder of whatever organization. But I think it's also appropriate to thank all the people behind them, the people that are working on these projects and making them shine. I think if I could gather all of our guests in a room, they would say the exact same thing. Social design is a team sport. It's a group effort. And all of these projects amazingly came to light. Lives of service depend on lives of support. And I think that was true for me, and it's been true for all of our guests. And that, dear listeners, is a part of our world. I bid my adieu, goodbye, and good luck, and stay tuned for further adventures.